the generator to the exhaust port outside the house. It's only a matter of time before that metallic object is going to fatigue, and you're going to be spraying carbon monoxide into the house. So for a whole bunch of reasons, never, never consider running a motor generator set inside the house. And even the people who decide to run it in the garage with the garage door open, let me drop, that is definitely not a safe thing to do. On the worst case day, the wind is going to blow in such a direction where even though you've got the garage door wide open, you've got the generator sitting a couple of feet from the outside door of the garage, and you think you're safe. If the wind blows the wrong way, that exhaust is going into the house, and carbon monoxide is nothing to play with. It should be outside of the house, a significant distance away from the house, so in the worst case wind direction, that exhaust can't get into the house. So there's a whole bunch of things you got to consider with motor generator sets, and when you're backfeeding like I did, you can get yourself into a fair amount of trouble. To properly wire that double prong backfeeder, you're ending up with male blades out of both ends of that extension cord. And if the end going to the house disconnects and somebody goes over there and touches those blades, that's not good. There is a marine version of an extension cord that has male blades, but they're recessed inside of the socket of the connector, making it reasonably safe. And so hooking up one of those would be a way of doing it and making it safer. There's a number of ways you can easily miswire that extension cord. So we're gonna pick this up again next week, because I guarantee you very few of us have gotten, let me drop.
Yeah, one more comment.
Okay, we'll get that one more comment. Very few of us have got the time to buy a motor generator set between now and Tuesday, when we're going to be getting on Long Island, they're predicting something like 30 inches. Go ahead with your additional comment.
You're in 1LF. Yes, gasoline in the house. 5 gallons of gasoline is equivalent to one stick of dynamite. Dick's right, it'll blow your roof right off your house there. Very unsafe, not only the flash point on it, the fumes off it also. And something I didn't say the last time last year, Dick, when I stepped in there with the generator seminars. Fire extinguishers. Make sure you have a fire extinguisher for your generator. Make sure it's fully charged at all times. But do not put it next to your generator, because fire extinguisher is no good while your generator is on fire, because you can't get to your fire extinguisher because it's next to your generator. A fire extinguisher is something you grab and you take to the fire. And filling it up while it's running, it's a no-no. It's even dangerous filling it up while it's been sitting there for a while. So, all right, we'll let this beaten horse there go for a while there. So, like I said, everyone be safe there. Thanks for letting me step in, Dick, and we'll talk to you some other time on this. Anyone else, to be clear, back to you.
And if it's a diesel genset, don't use the halogen fire extinguisher. N1YDY.
Yeah, Bob, let me ask you this question. Because to be safe for carbon monoxide, that motor generator set is some significant number of feet away from the house. Therefore, if the generator does catch on fire and it's a reasonable distance from the house, the chances of it giving you fire grief to the house, I think, is relatively low. Am I wrong on that one? N1 Alpha, Lima Foxtrot, K2LAW.
N1 Alpha. Well, most of the times that we've experienced a generator catching on fire is usually an explosion. Generator, and once he explodes, whatever in your tank there, the tank bursts open, and then there's fire all over the place, because it's spilling fuel out all over there during the explosion.
Okay, if the generator is outdoors in the open air, how do you get enough combustible material in one spot simultaneously without the wind blowing it away to make an explosion? Over to you, Bob.
Well, most of the time it's a malfunction in there, and it's a heat situation there. Some of the newer generators aren't like the cast iron ones that could take the heat a lot more and longer there. And like you're saying, the wind factor there. Even with a generator legal length of your codes here in your town there, shifting winds, humidity, air, whatever, plays a lot of factor with carbon monoxide there and blowing back there. having enough distance away there. Like I said, in running it properly, even a brand new generator, let me put it this way. You're going to have problems with something all the time there, and it's something that's not predictable. All I can say is just keep it a distance from your house. I know with snow and stuff, they make sheds for generators that you can put them in. They're not cheap. You know, you have to buy them. Either they're pre-made or you can buy a particular Suncrest shed from Sears. There's a company that makes the louvers that you cut into them with an exhaust fan, so it's exhausting the carbon monoxide within that little shed there, and also keeping the generator cool and keeping it out of the rain there. So, all right, we'll let you go with the space net there. I think you're moving on there with what's going on in space there, Dick. So we're going to go to bed because we got to be up early for this storm there and be ready. So all our equipment is ready. So we're going to get ready to go tomorrow. Anyone else? Back to you.
Now, what kind of a vehicle are you going to be driving to do the snow removal tomorrow, Rob? Go ahead.
No, I don't have the big truck that I used to be in the QRZ days here. I stepped down to a Honda Ridgeline there. I don't do any plowing there, Dick. The facility that I'll be working at and with the fire department there as a volunteer. But my work location there, basically keeping our sidewalks there. I work for the U.S. Postal Service here in Greenwich. The maintenance side there. So just keeping our sidewalks clear there and make sure everything's safe there. And hopefully if the government shuts down the state, that means it shuts, the post office will hopefully follow. Back to you.
Six. I was told the mail has to always go through. I think it was YDY. Bill, you wanted to make a comment? Hank, you wanted to make a comment?
I was just going to say, if you're using a diesel genset, don't use a halogen fire extinguisher. I know they're hard to find these days, but a lot of guys hoarded them and kept them, and they don't really work too well with a diesel genset.
So what is the recommended kind of fire extinguisher for a diesel genset?
Well, there's a newer version of a halogenated agent, and I'm not really sure what it's called. It doesn't work as well as regular Halon 1211, there was 1211, and there was 1049, I think it was, but there were two different types. It's been a long time since I've looked into this, but the newer type stuff works fine. But believe it or not, the Halon was available before, which was really wonderful for most fires, really was very effective. But they were concerned about it, its effect in the atmosphere. This stuff will actually not prevent the diesel from running. There's actually documented cases of what they call diesel runaway, where if the diesel was in a compartment in a boat and they actuated the built-in fire extinguisher, the diesel just kept running. N1YDY.
Any comment on regular chem fire extinguishers?
Yeah, it is too bad that Halon became unavailable, and I think we've overreacted to that one. When it comes to chlorofluorocarbons of air conditioning systems, because every single vehicle and every single refrigerator and every single air conditioner in houses and cars, whatever, the amount of Freon that we were using was huge. The amount of Halon we were using to suppress fires, I'll be amazed if it was 0.1%. And so to take such an extremely effective fire extinguishing substance, Halon, and outlaw it, I think we've overreacted. You want to make a further comment on this one, Rob? N1 ALF K2LAW?
Yeah, because Halon didn't leave a chemical powder all over your radios and stuff and your electronics. That's another thing I tell people, because most people go to Home Depot and buy a chem fire extinguisher. If you use it, you have to clean off as much as possible you can off any kind of electrical wires, because it will corrode it. Back to you.
Okay. Go ahead, John. KC2WGB, K2LIW.
KC2WGB. Just to let you know, Dick, on all the large installations we did, they were all fire suppression was CO2 on diesel generators.
I have CO2.
Okay. I think we're going to move on to the space report. Anybody object to that?
No, let me find out. Good night.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you for coming in. Hey, Paul, before I'm going to let you go, sorry we kept you so long. WS2N with space report number 133, I think it is. K2RAW in the TechNet.
One-eye with a comment.
I do have 133. And there are a lot of good topics with these generators. So, with problems coming up this weekend, I consider that a priority. Not the space news. Dick, a lot of flights coming up. There's just so many of them, can't keep track of them all. So, I mean, in the next 2 weeks alone, there's 6 or 7 flights. Not all from our country, but, Japan's launching one. And, European Space Agency, they've got a launch. We've got one coming up with Falcon 9. It was supposed to be the end of this month, but that's been delayed to the first week of February. So, a lot of flights. Let me drop it. So, the follow-up to the Falcon 9 that almost made it to the platform, the floating platform, that was actually considered a success because it made it to the platform. It just happened to explode after it hit. Rockets came on to try to save it at the last second, but that didn't work out. Well, they're going to have another test of that system on probably the first week of February now, I guess. It's a flight that will be going up, and that's being launched from Florida and from Cape Canaveral. They'll be launching from Launch Complex 40, and that will be going to the L1 position. The Discover mission, formerly known as Triana. So, I wish them luck for that. Hope that thing makes it back to the barge this time around, because if that doesn't make it, we'll have to wait until probably about 3 months before another flight, and that'll be going up to the International Space Station. SpaceX does have another flight before that, but they won't be using a barge, because that'll be taking off from Vandenberg, California, Vandenberg Air Force Base. So they won't be able to have enough time to send a barge through the Panama Canal, I guess, to go into the Pacific Ocean. My guess is they'll probably try to duplicate bringing it down back to the ocean. They've done that before. Practice makes perfect. We'll have to see how they do. I went over last week. We were talking about the different power of all the different rockets that go up. And it's not easy finding the thrust of each and every one of these high-powered rockets. You can find the lift capability. That's a little deceiving, because sometimes the second stages of some rockets are more powerful than other ones. So the ultimate lifting capability is a lot more. For instance, Falcon 9, when bolted together with two other Falcon 9s, will call the Falcon Heavy. And that'll have enough power to lift almost twice the amount that the space shuttle put up into space. But if you look at the numbers, the space shuttle when launched was around 6 million pounds per thrust, and the Falcon 9 Heavy is roughly half of that, a little over 3 million. And it's advertised that Falcon 9 Heavy will bring up more weight. What they don't consider is the weight of the shuttle. The payload of the shuttle, 50,000 pounds, and the payload for the SpaceX Falcon Heavy, over 100, roughly 111,000 pounds. So, it looks like it's twice the amount, but in reality, putting a payload pretty much with the Falcon rocket. You're not putting up a shuttle that has to come back. So I just want to go over that. I know we talked about which one's more powerful last week, and I have a whole deal on whatever, pretty much whatever popular rocket that goes up, Soyuz or Antares or whatever it is. If anybody needs information on that. I didn't have that much this week, Dick, but one thing I wanted to cover is something called OneWeb Network. It's thinking about putting up over 600 satellites in low Earth orbit. And when I say low Earth orbit, roughly around 400 miles up, which is almost twice the height that the International Space Station is at. They want to put a constellation of over 600 of these things, each one weighing a little over 100 kilograms, so all around maybe 250 pounds each, and they want to launch this and have create an internet system with these satellites. Anywhere on the Earth, you'll be able to use the internet, but instead of using, you know, some board speed like, you know, 50 or 20 megabytes that you might get with Optimum or Verizon, these things will run at 6 gigs. So this is really out there, and actually quite a few companies are involved with it, including SpaceX. They want to be involved with this as well. They want to set up a factory to build these satellites. So I thought that was interesting. And we dropped this WS-2N. One more launch on February 11th I wanted to mention is the European Space Agency. They're going to launch a craft called the Intermediate Experimental Vehicle. I don't know if you've seen this. It's a lifting body, no wings, but you know it's elongated. It's quite long. It has no wings. What controls the speed of this thing is just two flaps in the back. But the idea is to scale this up as time goes on. This thing only weighs, you know, maybe 10,000 pounds or something. They want to fly it at 17,000 miles an hour, straight up from French Guiana, which is in northern South America. And that's their launch facility. They want to send it up, not orbit, suborbit, but have it come down in the Pacific Ocean. And if this is successful, they want to develop it more and eventually have a reusable spacecraft, not only for cargo, but for crews. This is the European Space Agency's really first attempt at a potential manned space vehicle, which would have the capability of going into orbit and returning to Earth, you know, on a pinpoint location, somewhat pinpoint. On the way down, it doesn't come down like a shuttle. You know, it comes down with aerodynamically, but toward the end of the flight, they have a parachute or a parasail come out and to guide it down. You know, for the last.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
I have a lot more information here, but I think we're running low on time. So I'll just turn it back to you for any questions. Anybody else? K2RIW, WS2N, TechNet, space portion of the TechNet.
NY2H?
Go right ahead, Lou.
Yes, good evening, all. And Paul, with regard to that satellite system with the internet, one of the features is because it's such low orbit, you don't have the latency that you'd have if they did it geosynchronous or anything like that. And from what I understand, the satellites will be routers in themselves, so it's kind of like the terrestrial internet, except it's going to be up a few hundred miles, and they can pass on traffic from satellite to satellite and then back down to Earth. So if you have a point-to-point, say you're going access a web page, you know, route very similar to the internet, but because of, again, the low orbit, you don't have the latency issue. So it sounds like a really cool idea.
Okay, very good. I'm just starting to read about this recently, so it looks good. They have a interference problem with a lot of satellites above them, and one of the ways they're going to try to correct that, you know, you could imagine transmitting down on similar frequencies, creating interference with military mic communications or weather satellite, but, you know, you've got a lot of high-tech, top-secret stuff that they don't want, you know, they don't want to cause interference, you know, with signals going up and down from these hundreds of satellites. So they have a technique called progressive pitch. So apparently they're going to turn the satellites a little bit, to base their antennas in a slightly skewed manner. Maybe you've heard of this progressive pitch system used either on Earth or on satellites. It's a way to avoid interference with other stations. Have you ever came across that, Dick? Back to you, WS2M.
I'm not sure I have, Paul. I'm going to have to look into this one. 600 satellites. Whoa. I mean, when you worry about satellites hitting each other and you got a constellation of 24 of them that are active for the global positioning satellite system, and this system consists of 600. I've forgotten the name of the global satellite system that was put up roughly 10 years ago, which turned out to be financially not viable, and the system got rid. What was the name of that one again, Paul?
Iridium. They were going to have 77 satellites. Now that's where they got the name, because that's how many electrons they got or something. Back to you.
Yeah, I think Iridium is periodic table element number 77. I think that's how it was chosen. And so I think Iridium is still up and operational, but I know it was not commercially viable. Therefore, I think it got sold to the the U.S. government. Isn't that roughly true, Paul? Go ahead.
Savage Boy White. I don't know what happened toward the end. I remember they were involved with it. I think they ran into some financial problems with this whole system. Another station, Dick.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe. Wait for the beep.
I was away from the radio for a while, so I didn't miss, catch anything as far as all the space report stuff goes. Did you happen to mention anything about that asteroid that's going, it's supposed to be going by tomorrow? What's it called? 2004 BLA-6?
Okay. I don't recognize what you're saying, but maybe Paul does. Go ahead, Paul.
I sent the link to your home email. Look at it. That's what, it's called 2004 space BLA-6. It must be some asteroid that's going to pass about three times the distance between the Earth and the Moon to the Earth by tomorrow sometime, like 700-something thousand miles away or something like that.
Yeah, very good. And they say astronomers would be able to also see this thing 1,800 feet in diameter.
Yes, this I have heard about. You said it so fast, Joe. I thought you were talking about a satellite, a man-made object, and now you're talking about a comet or asteroid, I guess it is, that's going to be passing by, and I think it passes by the Earth again in another 100 years, as I remember, and I think they said that amateur astronomers with a telescope of more than 6 inches in diameter will see it, I think, with the numbers. So maybe you want to say a few words on this one, Paul. WS2N, K2LIW in the group.
Yeah, it's the biggest one around for many, many years, and probably for many more years to come. I think they said 2020-something. They got another one a little bit bigger. But again, that one's not gonna hit Earth. You know, they're always finding these things. They know the ones that are in orbit, when they're going to be here again. The ones that they don't know about, that they have to really worry about. But the one that's going to come out from behind the sun, you know, a comet that, you know, that they won't have much of a warning for, you know, that's the other ones they're going to have to worry about, but not this one, Dick. But, okay, I just wanted to just go over that one story with the satellites and see what happens with that. But I don't know. It seems like a lot of clutter up there. We've got I think around 1,500 active satellites, and then now they're going to add all, you know, 600 more. I don't know if this is such a great idea. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, I hope they do a good study of writing down iridium so I don't forget it. A good study of this one to find out is to a good prediction of its commercial financial viability. Iridium, as I see it, was done with some very optimistic numbers as to range, latency, extension. I mean, how big is the handheld thing on the ground that's going to communicate with iridium? How expensive was it? How expensive is the service? Had they really done a objective financial study, I think they would have realized ahead of time that it was kind of iffy. And so I'm pretty sure the system did get sold to the U.S. government, because it did go into bankruptcy, so to speak, or Chapter 11. And this, so Iridium was 77 satellites at a much higher orbit, I'm presuming. What is it called now? OneWeb Network with 600 satellites. Wow. What do we know about... Let me drop... What do we know about how many watts, how much antenna, what frequency is the portable unit on the ground? I presume the whole idea is now that you can be driving around in your go-kart and communicating on the internet, so to speak, by way of this system, and at the rate of 600 gigs. Whoa. It sounds to me like to get that kind of bandwidth, you better be in X-band. But with X-band, you get what's called a lot of space loss to try to get a high-gain antenna that's properly aimed at X-band to give you good coverage between ground and earth. As I see it, the uplink is the tough one, because the guy on the ground doesn't want to have to aim a dish, if you know what I mean, at the satellite. I haven't heard about this one, so anything you tell me will be giving me new information. Paul, WS2N, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay. Yeah, well, not 600 gig, but between 6 and 8 gigabits. Nah, there's a difference between bits and bytes, we know that. So, and they're roughly 1,200 kilometers up, and some 650 is planned. By the way, Iridium, yeah, they had 77, and then they cut that number way back. So, I forget, you know, I don't know if it turned out to be half that number, but due to financial problems. So the end result was not going to be 77, but they still called it the Iridium program when they were working on it. It's going to be in the KU band. That's pretty much all I know about it. I haven't researched it that much, but I like this one thing where they talked about the interference, and they were going to have something called progressive pitch, in which the satellites are slightly turned to avoid interference with the KU satellites that are up in the geosynchronous orbit. So we'll find out what that means down the road, Dick. But you know, if they do this, you know, it's going to be a big contract for instance, SpaceX. They want to put these up, and they also want to build the satellites, which is unusual. They're doing something similar to Orbital Science. Orbital Science not only launches the Antares rocket, but they build countless space vehicles that are actually put up in space. All these commercial companies are starting to compete with one another. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, I'm about about to do a calculation of free space loss on KU band for a satellite that's direct overhead at 1,200 kilometers, and I know I'm going to come up with a lot of dBs. Therefore, the ground station, I mean, you and I would like it to be something that looks like a cell phone that on KU band communicates with the satellite, and you're transmitting 6 gigabits per second up and down. Wow. I don't think a cell phone and cell phone kind of power at KU band can do that. 1,200 kilometers reliable communication, even though it's free space. No tree attenuation in buildings and earth curvature and all that. Still, have they said anything about what the ground station will look like? Will it really be something portable like a cell phone? What do you think, Paul? WS2N, K2RAW?
The only thing I read is that it was looking to set up countless ground stations, so who knows, maybe a cell phone will be talking to the ground station. I don't know. If it's not strong enough to go direct, maybe it'll use the ground station. They're going to need the ground stations, for transmitting back. You can go from satellite to satellite to satellite, but sooner or later you've got to get back to Earth. Just want to mention that one other thing. The New Horizon is going to be taking pictures. I believe within a week, probably the beginning of February, we should see the first pictures coming back from the New Horizon about Pluto. So I'm going to look for that next week. But they figure roughly within probably a month and a half or two, the pictures will start to look better than what the Hubble can get. And that will pass directly close to Pluto on July 14th. Just had to bring that up. And you got to watch some of these websites. I mean, I pulled one up about Pluto and its mission. It looked pretty good. I mean, you start off on Yahoo and they talk about the Pluto mission and you click on it. But I think to expedite these reports they put together, let me drop it. They give you a rough information about the spacecraft, the size, and where it's going, and it looks all pretty good. Click on this video, and you can watch it, from the beginning until the end. So I click on it, and they talk about the spacecraft that launched it. And the spacecraft that they're showing is not the Atlas V, which is the one that it took off. We talked about that last week or the week before, how fast it got from here, past the moon orbit, which was 9 hours. I know it's the Atlas V with five booster rockets attached to it. And sure enough, I'm looking at the Delta IV, the Delta IV Heavy, the one that launched Orion. Here's the New Horizon going up, in 2006. You still got to be careful about these websites, including the one about all these satellites. I had to go to a couple of websites to try to make sure this is all true. Back to you, Dick. WS2N.
I just did a quick calculation on Paul. KU band to me is 15 gigs, but I know that occasionally they make 12.5 gigs. They call it KU band. It's really X band. If it's truly KU band, 15 gigs and 1,200 kilometers, free space loss, isotropic antennas on each end, 178 dB. Now, if you've got a good-sized dish on the satellite aimed at a particular point on the Earth, you can get 45 dB of gain out of that dish at KU band. And if the transmitter on the ground is running a watt, that's plus 30 dBm. And so you put those numbers together, the signal strength you're going to get at the satellite is minus 103 dBm, which is not that many dB above threshold, where you're going to be able to transmit a data rate of 6,006 gigabits per second, which would suggest 6 gigs of bandwidth. six gigs of bandwidth to transmit at 6 gigabits. Well, it's really going to be, let me drop. It'll be some kind of fancy encoding technique, like 16QAM, which makes things a little bit better. But still, my understanding of the numbers tells me that...
Ka band.
That's even worse. That's even higher yet. You're going to get more free space loss. Wow. Has anybody said what the ground station is likely to look like that are going to communicate with those 600 satellites? Has that been mentioned, Paul? Go ahead.
I haven't found anything on the ground station, so I have no idea. This is all preliminary. There are a couple of companies are involved, and SpaceX wants to jump on board. Actually, he looked like he wanted to do something independent of this, but I think he's just going to become a part of it. We'll have to wait and see, Dick.
If there's a whole series of ground stations that are a parabolic dish aimed at the satellite, now it becomes easy. And then you, the private user, consider those ground stations as gateways, call them cell sites, super cell sites, and then assuming you're within a couple of miles of the cell site, so now the cell site becomes a relay station, the satellite becomes the bent pipe, now you've got a high-speed data network. So if the ground stations are parabolic dishes, you can do it. But if it's like Iridium, I mean, the whole concept of Iridium is you're carrying this super heavy cell phone, and you're going to be able to communicate anywhere in the world. And could you do that with this system? As I see it, it's going to be an awfully heavy cell phone, if you know what I mean, to transmit enough watts to overcome that huge amount of free space loss. We call it free space loss. Let me drop this. Free space really has no loss. What's going on is that make-believe the antenna on each end is a dipole. And now what you measure as the insertion loss between the transmitting dipole and the receiving dipole, because a Ka band dipole is only a fraction of an inch long. It ain't got very much capture area to it, if you know what I mean. It's a nearly isotropic radiator, and the receiving site is got very little capture area in the assessment of free space loss. And now that 178 or 180 some odd dB of apparent free space loss, you've got to overcome that with antenna gain and power on the transmitting end and antenna gain on both ends, and proper aiming of those antennas. So, where should I read to find out more about this poll? Where would I go? WS2N, K2LAW?
I would bring up OneWeb. You could bring up SpaceX version of it, or one of the other companies that written down here somewhere. What was the name of this company that was involved with this thing? Stand by one. I know I put it on my tablet here somewhere. Web is, yeah. So, yeah, well, somebody called World 2, World VU Satellites is involved. And now Qualcomm Incorporated, they're involved. And they want to get Branson from Virgin Galactic. Yeah, well, he's in the Virgin Group. They're also investors. But I would try Googling OneWeb Network and start with that thing.
Okay, you just said some magic words, Qualcomm. That's a company that made a fortune on these Ku-band truck communication systems called Omnitrax. In other words, there's a Ku-band antenna that aims itself at the satellite on the hood of a truck on the top of the cab, and at 15 gigahertz, that gave you worldwide communication, so to speak, to every one of your trucks that are being dispatched. You might be sending some of your tractor-trailer trucks to Montana where there's no cell phones, no cell phone coverage, and you want to be able to tell them where the unanticipated pickup is going to take place, what major highways have got a traffic jam so you can tell your truck driver to avoid them, and so on. You want communication both ways to your truck driver while he's driving, and OmniTrax did that. I'm guessing that those were $3,000 or $4,000 installations on each truck, and I think I heard them say they sold 100,000 of them. You're talking about some really big money here. That's a license to print money. And Qualcomm is a really smart company that in the San Diego area that did this. So if Qualcomm is invested in this thing, doing some of the technical expertise, I suddenly have a brand new respect for them. I think it's not going to turn into another Iridium. I'm hearing some good words, Paul. WS2N, K2LAW.
Yeah, officially it's called OneWeb. That's one word. LTD, you know. So officially it was called WorldView. WorldVU before that. So we'll see what happens. I just can't see 650 satellites flying around up there. I know it's a long distance between each one, but it sounds like we're putting a lot of garbage into space that eventually will have to be replaced. I mean, these things aren't going to last forever, you know. I think we're polluting the polluting space like we did here on Earth. Back to you, Dick.
You've got a point, Paul. There's a couple of websites you can go to that gives you a three-dimensional picture, so to speak, of the Earth and all the satellites going around it. Wow.
Comment, Dick?
John recognized a tremendous number of satellites and an even greater number of pieces of space junk that did part of the launching that hasn't come back down yet. KC2WGB, K2RIW. Go ahead, John.
Very good, Dick. K2UPS just dashed in here with a note. He's actually using that system in the truck that he drives, just to let you know.
Wow. When you say that system, I think you're talking about the Qualcomm OmniTrax. Let's see. If we give enough delay, Rich will be able to come in and talk to us. So let's do that. I wonder how long he's been using that. And I bet he's quite happy with it. K2UPS, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Good evening, K2UPS Mobile, near Breezewood, Pennsylvania right now. Still snowing. If I had to list, going 10 years back, the first 8 years, we had Qualcomm units in the tractor that allowed us digital text messaging, as well as a voice-capable messaging through it, although we never used it for that. I don't know if it was enabled or not, but you could actually talk through it if you had to. But it was also used for tracking us and for sending us information on our dispatch. We've since switched over to another system that is now done by Motorola that uses cellular data, no longer using the satellite system. I think the monthly payment that they were paying was too great on the Qualcomm, which is why they switched over to the Motorola unit.
Very fine, Rich. I'm guessing in the beginning, the KU-band Qualcomm system gave you coverage in a whole lot of areas where there wasn't yet enough cell phone coverage. And the Qualcomm system was KU-band uplink and downlink, fairly expensive satellites, fairly expensive hardware on each individual tractor. Now that the cell phone coverage is getting as nearly complete as it is, at least on the major routes that you're likely to be taking, I can see how the cell site approach could be like half the cost or maybe even cheaper than that. You probably never have to drive through Montana, but if you did have to drive through northern Montana where there is very few cell sites, I think the amount of communication to your dispatching center could be a little bit of a problem. Is that true, Rich? And also, how much snow are you about to ship to us? K2UPS Mobile, Pennsylvania, K2LIW in the TechNet. Coming.
Okay, There's no snow on the road, it's just wet, but it is still coming down, although it's lightened up quite a bit since a few hours ago. And the temperature's right at the freezing mark, it's 32, 33, so I'm watching that carefully. With this system now, with Motorola going through the cell phones, you would have areas where you're just not going to have decent coverage. But the way the system is set up now, it does not have an external antenna. The antenna is actually in the back of the unit inside the truck, and it's mounted above my head on a gimbal mount. But if this tractor was to break down, which happens once in a while, we're able to remove it, and then they give us a cord that plugs into the cigarette lighter to power the unit. Now, it no longer gets information from the tractor when it's in that mode, but it's still able to track us as far as where we are and what we're doing. It just doesn't know if the truck is moving anymore because it's not hooked up to the truck computer. And then if we have to, they also give us a memory card so that we can download the information that this thing's gathered, and then we can bring that into dispatch at the end of the run so that they can download it and hopefully pay us correctly for the work that we did.
If I understand correctly, that system you're now describing, the real tractor-to-ground communication, is all cell site communication. Is that true, Rich? Go ahead.
I believe so. I don't think it's not hooked up to any antenna on the outside of the unit anymore. The old Qualcomm's unit, we had that radome in the back, right up near the roof, so it had a pretty much unobstructed view of the sky. This does not have that anymore. The antenna is on the back of the unit. And occasionally, even around here, depending on weather conditions and stuff, I've been in spots where it wasn't getting an update, and I had to go, a little distance down the road before it was able to establish the communication link again.
Very fine. Wes recognized. We've only got a minute left. You guys have been listening to TechNet number 1540. I'm going to turn it over to John for his closing comments before we turn it over to Wes, because we're essentially out of time. And let's see, I like snow. I'm not so sure I'm going to like the amount of snow, because I used to be a skier, a downhill skier. I'm not sure I'm going to like the amount of snow we're about to get in the next 2 days. Although my snow blower, as of today, is now in good working order. I went and plowed the snow all around the neighborhood, if you know what I mean. John, KC2WGB, K2LAW, go ahead, John.
KC2WGB. Very good, Dick. Well, interesting information tonight. Another great tech net. And if everything goes well, and we can live through the storm, we shall be back next Sunday. KC2WGB. Back to you, Dick, and everybody have a great time.
Yeah, interesting. In West Virginia, I was last week there. There is a Green Bank telescope, and there is no coverage of GPS or telephone networks yet.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Wes. That is the National Radio Astronomy Observatory, Green Bank, West Virginia. I've been there about four times going to conferences, and that is a radio quiet zone. There are no broadcast stations, no FM radio, no cell sites, no television. I think they've got cable TV in the town, but I don't think they've got anything else. And because it's a radio quiet zone, and when you're on the facility at the actual radio telescope, you're not allowed to drive with a vehicle that has ordinary ignition. Only diesel vehicles or bicycles are allowed. 73-year-old, fantastic place to visit, by the way. And bye-bye, K2LAW, clear and listening.
You have to say peace to one another.
I think that was RYY. What did you say, Joe?
You forgot to say be kind to one another.
Good point. They know that by now. But be nice to each other. Be kind to each other. Bye-bye, you guys. As I see it, John, I'm going to get more snow than you. As you go further out east on Long Island, it's possible I'm going to get 3 feet. You may only get 2 feet. But on Toad Hill, that's nothing, isn't it, John? John, do you have skis or snowshoes? Now, my family owns quite a few skis. haven't worn them in some time. We'll soon find out. Have fun. Bye-bye, guys.
Test. WHCDO. Test 1234. 12345.
No, NY2H.
Hello,
WHCDO. Hello. Are you staying home tomorrow?
No. Nope, I have a lot of testing to do in the city. I will be working.
I suppose you're going to be testing your system for snow resilience to see how the snow affects your new system, huh? I hope you have an easy time coming back home. Well, you'll be in mass transit, but still. Stations at home. Crazy what they're forecasting.
Yeah, but tomorrow shouldn't be too bad. I take the railroad, the subways, and if it gets worse, I just leave early, that's all. And then I'll see you on Tuesday. Tuesday I may not go in, depending on how bad it is. If it's really bad, I'll just start, you know, digging out on Tuesday. I have a snow blower. And it's all ready to go. And that's it. I got stocked up with food, so I'm all set. So we'll see. But yeah, I'll go in tomorrow and then I'll just play it by ear.
Yeah, okay, you're probably right. I think it's not going to be, the evening is going to be bad. Or at least starting in the evening and then tomorrow night. Alright. So I heard your testing.
Yeah, I'm listening to you on 8.5. The link audio is very low. It's only deviating about 3/4 of a KC at max. Not even up to 1 KC of deviation on peaks. And so I got to turn the volume up a lot to hear you. But, you know, that's listening back on 8.5.
Actually, I'm coming in on Echo Link. Let me try 3.75. Hold on.
Okay, is this better?
Alright, now talk a little bit. Let me hear the difference.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on Echo Link.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10 on Selden.
Yeah, the frequency response is much different. Much higher, you're very bassy and muffled on Echo Link. And deviation is around 0.95 on... Onto the Selden, deviation's a little bit higher, not that much, about 1.2 KC, 1.3, but the frequency response is much better. So the volume is a little bit louder, but not much.
VA2CDL, NY2H.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I dropped my Echo Link connection. It was on my phone, I actually set it for an additional 6 dB on the audio and I was testing it, but it dropped, maybe because I made that change. But I can connect again. Oh well. You know, I think so. Anyhow. Alrighty. Well, I will talk to you. That's it.
Yeah, okay. Alright, very good. Yeah, looking at my audio through the link. It's, let's see, 5, that's a little bit better this way, 5, 2.1 KC or so. Maybe it's because it's narrow banded, that's possible. Okay. I'm looking, hold on a second, I hear something else coming in. Alright, yeah, because I'm listening to myself, but I'm actually listening to the, 8.5 again. But, yeah, maybe he's got it in a narrow band mode, because that would explain that.
Yeah, it is. It's in narrow band mode, as far as I understand. And it always sounds muffled down here. In the car, sometimes, depending on who's on, sometimes it's hard to hear him. Everything is muffled and bassy, but, alright. 7.3. I don't know what time you're getting up tomorrow. I'll see you. WA2CDL.
My 2H. Okay. Yeah, I'll probably take a 7:30 train. That's usually the time I get out. So, because I have to go all the way up to the Bronx tomorrow. It's a long trip. By subway, anyway. All right, talk to you. And, that's it. So, me too. Nothing else over here. See ya, WHCDL.
Disconnected.
Radio Newsline Report number 1949 for the release date read 2 months. The following is a QF Michigan gets its own RB1 and off. A launch date for the Fox 3 called out in Ohio to assist after night of the DK around the world floater balloon around the world trip past the island the expedition of the F-050 satellite and all is added again. Find out the details on MA right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline. Amateur Radio's first and only independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
A decade of RL Michigan section nomination provision pertinent language in 97.5 of the FCC Amateur.
Repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Gambic.
EC2 WGB.
Much better.
Let me ask you something. If they get rid of this guy, the Tsar, when he's replaced, do you think it would be a better person? Or someone just the same?
I've been asked the same question. One of the ham radio operators. Not really blindly for America. But he is not for Russia, absolutely not. He's realistic, he says, well, nobody was able to finish up the Russian bear. And I answered him that, well, look. Oh, let me go to that hold on. Okay. Further, the conversation started from a typical Russian statement. Who is a garbage? I'm gonna put him into the trash. That's a typical Russian statement. That means, for Russia, most of the world is a trash. It's a garbage. So they want to put them to the trash. So he said, well, there was never a situation when anybody was able to fight Russian bear, and those who were trying to do that were barely able to get out alive. My response to it was that it is not about Russian power, but it's about the power of the Western world. Is it part of the Western world decides to approach Russia with the sanctions and the nation will start to have a problem with the food, then Russia will be done, because the opposition then would be too big and too strong to fight, to be fighted back. The killings that have been done to Ukrainians, towards murderers, all those 9,000